This week in Retronauts, this podcast was a gift from God. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Retronauts, episode 16-Pocket. I'm the host for this week, Jeremy Parrish. With me on the remote studio, or the basic studio. Maybe I'm the remote person. I don't know. It's crazy and mixed up. I'm having trouble with it. But we have Bob and Ray. Bob, Ray, speak for yourselves.
Blame yourself or Bob.
Jesus. Well, I can't top that. But I am Ray.
And
that was
week,
the motto
in case
up,
you... This week, in case
really
you weren't clear on it yet. No, that's great. We're talking about the Evil East series, games kind of by Yasumi Matsuno, but also kind of not. This podcast topic comes to us by request of Jeff Tibian, or Jeff Tibian, or something along those lines. Jeff, thanks for supporting Retronauts, and everyone else, thanks for bearing with us while we talk about kind of the same topic as last week, but different.
Yes.
So... yes, Evil East. In case you're not familiar with it, it's a land, a fictional land that exists in video games. Video games that started with Final Fantasy Tactics. I mentioned Yasumi Matsuno, and I think it's important to kind of get that out of the way, because Matsuno is kind of well known for making these very dense, strategic, kind of dark... Western mythology, medieval style video games, but he's also kind of famous for thinking really big. And something that sort of defined most of his games is that he sees them as part of a bigger framework, a bigger mythos. So, you know, the first game he directed was Ogre Battle, which was what, part five of the Ogre Battle saga? Is that right?
Yes.
I think so, yeah.
It was kind of like an episode four Star Wars thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, instead of kind of being shoehorned in there when he was like, oh, this is success. This is a success. I can make more money by extending the trilogy. This was kind of, you know, intended from the start. So I can't remember if Ogre Battle is part five or part six, but Tactics Ogre is the other part of that. And then the rest of his games never really happened because he moved on from Quest and started up at Square Enix. Or, I guess, Squaresoft at the time,
yeah.
And created Final Fantasy Tactics. But he did the same thing there, where he saw Final Fantasy Tactics as belonging to the world of Evil East, which, you know, we didn't really know at the time. But then once Vagrant Story came out, like, 3 years later, people started to notice, hey, there's, like, little common references and hooks. Like, Valindia here, where the game takes place, also kind of sort of belongs to the land of Evil East, and oh, there's a reference to TG Sid, and oh, there's a reference to Agrius, and you know, it really kind of exploded once we got to Final Fantasy Tactics Advance and Final Fantasy XII, both of which took place in Evil East. But the series or the universe actually extended beyond Matsuno's time at Square, so other people eventually sort of took over and continued making Evil East games without his involvement.
What strikes me about these games is the backstory is often more complicated and interesting than what's currently happening. And that is very odd for an RPG, especially a Japanese RPG, where it's always like, oh, there was an event or something happened 1,000 years ago, and it's just like this singular thing that can be described with a sentence. In Final Fantasy Tactics, if you want to read the backstory, you can immediately go to the bar in the beginning of the game, and there are like 18 pages of backstory that are horribly localized in the original. God help you if you can figure out what is being said in the original. But still, there is so much background detail. And I think that is what's the most prevalent thing in these Evil East games, is that the background detail is the most effort is put into that. Not necessarily what your characters are doing, just like sort of what's happening around them or what has happened before they even existed.
Yeah, I name-dropped Elder Scrolls in the Matsuno episode, you know, to compare it to Final Fantasy XII. And I really think that comparison holds true for Evil East, because that same sort of philosophy of like this extensive world-building happening in the background... you know, potentially being more interesting than the core story that you're experiencing is very much a part of Elder Scrolls. Like, if you start to play Elder Scrolls games, even Skyrim, and start to pay attention to the books and the lore, like, that's a rabbit hole you can just fall down into and spend hours exploring and come away with a sense mm-hmm. that, oh, wow, there's, like, there's a lot happening here that is only kind of referenced in passing. But once you know all those things, the people you talk to in the game, the throwaway references suddenly become much more meaningful, and everything kind of has this added context that, I think is... It enhances the story. I think it's possible for games to get too carried away with lore, or for them to lean too much on the idea of buying peripheral content in order to understand the games. Like, the Halo series is really bad about that. But I don't think that's really the case mm-hmm. with Evil East. I think a lot of the backstory is either here, or it's not even explained. Like, it's just there to kind of, you know... There's a story Bible, and... The idea of a story Bible really should be as something for the authors to consult, something for them to look at and say, like, this is what we should build, our stories around. This should be the foundation, and we should use these things to inform our story. I think the mistake a lot of people make is trying to turn those story Bibles into public-facing works so that readers and gamers and whoever else have to be aware of those things. And I don't think Evil East does that. I think it kind of takes the proper approach of there is backstory and there's some that you can look into, but mostly it seems to exist in Matsuno's brain. And, that's kind of informing his work. And maybe that's why the non-Matsuno Evil East games kind of stumble a bit.
Yeah, that doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, I feel like the Evil East is less of a less of a setting and more of a theme. I mean, because even when things are happening in the country between different games, they're like, I think FF Tactics and FF12 take place within that region, but in completely in different parts of the country. So those histories never intersect with each other. Is that correct?
I've seen people try to draw maps of what Evil East looks like, and I totally blanked out on this, but. Basically, you can fit, I think it's FF12's map can fit Tactics map somewhere inside of it, not the other way around. I think the world of FF12, Evil East is kind of like a continent in that sense. And then in Tactics, Evil East is more like a nation, but it does kind of line up with some of the geography of the world of Final Fantasy XII. So if you look at 12 as taking place a long, long time before Tactics, then it kind of seems like Evil East maybe was an empire or something that shrank over time, and in Tactics they're duking it out over the remnants of Evil East. And then Vagrant Story takes place in Valindia, which is in the Evil East setting but is a separate nation, and I think that Valindia is referenced in Final Fantasy XII. Right. But not really in Tactics.
And I did want to point out, though, not to burst anyone's bubble, but Vagrant Story was only considered part of Evil East, retroactively. Originally, Matsuno was like, these games have nothing, Vagrant Story has nothing to do with FF Tactics. I want to kind of do a different thing. But then it was sort of retconned into the Evil East world. But I mean, thematically, it fits in perfectly.
Yeah, I mean, that does explain why Vagrant Story doesn't use Final Fantasy conventions for spell names and things like that. It has its own set of magic and that sort of stuff. But yeah, like thematically, like you said, it really fits in. And it does also reference Final Fantasy Tactics at certain times.
Right. I feel like trying to apply logic to the history of this world is never going to work because like there are five races that end up showing up in Tactics Advance and 12. It's just like, where are they in the other games? Did all of these races die out? Only humans are left? It's just like...
Well, yes, actually.
Oh, you're right. Yes, you're right.
Yeah.
I just stumbled into a segue.
It's funny you should say that. I mean, if you want to start with Final Fantasy Tactics, Tactics is basically set in the latter days of Evil East. Like, it takes place long after the Golden Era. And there is actually a battlefield you can go to where it says that Moogles are extinct. Like, the only Moogle you see in Tactics is one of the summons, comes and heals your party or something. But if you read the flavor text on one of the battlefields, which is, kind of out of the way, and you have to go searching for where you find the flavor text in the menus, it does talk about how Moogles used to live there, and, that was before they died off.
Right.
So okay. I think you can draw a line and say, like, the Moogles died off, and so did the Gria, so did the Banga, so did the
Viera.
Viera, yeah. So eventually humans were the only ones left. You know, it's kind of like, actually, it's kind of like what happened in the mainline Final Fantasy games. Like, Final Fantasy 1 has elves and it has dwarves, and these other races become less and less prevalent in the 8-bit and 16-bit Final Fantasy games until, you know, basically all that's left in Final Fantasy 6 is like a race of Moogles, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. So 12 is even more like Star Wars. It takes place in a long time ago in an evilist not far away, here. Still here.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, jeez.
But I mean, if you look at the evilise in Final Fantasy Tactics, like, it still has magic, but you get the sense that everything has fallen into disrepair. Like, the only place you see airships are in the airship graveyard, which is just like a place of wrecks of airships, which is kind of where the final battle takes place. It's like this forgotten, hidden world. I think the idea is kind of that, like, Final Fantasy XII is sort of the J.R.R. Tolkien Middle Earth meets ancient Greece of Ivalice, and Tactics is more like much later, after all the good stuff had gone away. Mm-hmm. And I think it's pretty easy to look at what happens in the course of Final Fantasy XII story and see, you know, kind of what happens to magic in that world. So I think there actually is kind of some logic as you go from point to point in the continuity. But again, it is all kind of loose, and I don't think you should necessarily try to build like a grand unifying theory for all of Ivalice. But there does seem to be this kind of logical progression, like a timeline for the world.
Right. Now, like, Ivalice, I don't know if we can consider this a management decision to have all these games set in Ivalice, but there was a real Square initiative at the time to have these sort of, you know, multi-game universes. Like, the compilation of FF7 was around at the time, and there's Ivalice.
Yeah, World of Mana.
And then there's Fabula Nova Crystallis, which ended up being, like, a multiple train wreck with every game that was supposed to be involved with that.
Right.
I feel like those games did not nearly, maybe they were just lacking in... I mean, with Fabula Nova Crystallis, I can't even explain to you what that world is or is about. There's just, it just, like, nothing is cohesive about it. But with Ivalice, everything just feels like, even if you can't draw a direct history from everything you see, it just all feels thematically consistent from game to game.
Yeah, I mean, the Ivalice Alliance strikes me as something that was kind of created by Square to tie a bunch of games together to Final Fantasy XII. And it happened after Matsuno left the company. So it was basically like a way for them to say, all right, this dude left us some really cool ideas, so let's milk those. And yeah. I mean, if you look at the Ivalice Alliance games, they're not the Matsuno games. They're Final Fantasy Tactics A2. They're Final Fantasy XII Revenant Wings.
Yeah.
And then there was that that MOBA game, Crystal Defenders. Yeah. Like,
right.
And
right.
I think Fortress, the Grin game, was going to be part of the Ivalice Alliance, but that just kind of fizzled out.
I was reading about that. You were right. Yeah, I guess you were supposed to play as Princess Ash in that game, in the Fortress game,
or something like that.
That was the plan. I was just reading a little bit about it today.
She had a greater role in it.
Yeah, it was supposed to be an action RPG from the people who brought you the Bionic Commando HD game.
Hell yeah! Oh, wait.
So it probably had a really stupid story. but probably was, you know, technically competent and, you know, functionally pretty fun to play. But apparently there was a lot of just ill will that happened. I don't know. It sounds like we've only ever heard Grin's side of the story. So who can say what the real story was? But the way they've presented it, Square was just really underhanded about the whole thing and basically just resistant to the idea of a Western studio working on Final Fantasy. So
then why hire
they would
them?
Like,
yeah.
Yeah, I feel like it's a mystery.
They were setting them up to fail. Like, I've read stories, and you guys can look these up, about how when they wanted to change the code, they would have to fax. I believe Square at one point demanded an entire fax of the game's code, which would require how many pages? I don't even know.
Well, hey, that
insane.
Sounds like, well, Square does that to
fax,
the media,
that's...
too.
Yeah.
No, the most infamous story from Fortress is that they were complaining about some of the enemy designs. So Grin took character designs, like enemy designs from, I think, Final Fantasy 13, and sent those over, and they were sent back rejected with the stamp that, no, this doesn't look enough like Final Fantasy. You need to, like, you don't understand what Final Fantasy is
Burn
about.
This. Yeah.
Yeah. So
if
I don't know
true.
How that would have, I don't know how that would have turned out, and it's easy hilarious. To, I don't know, it's easy to, like, assume the worst about Square. They've really made that, a simple fact of life for
people. It's hard to give them the benefit of the doubt anymore. But
but at the same time, it is hard to say because we are only hearing about this from the disgruntled people. So I don't doubt that there was a lot of stupidity that went down with the game, though. Mm-hmm. And the idea of hiring a Western studio and then saying, wow, why are we letting Western studios working on this? Like, that seems so stupid that it's probably real.
Yeah.
Well, don't worry. Front Mission Evolved made it out the door.
Oh, God. And I still feel bad.
So anyway, back to Ivalice. So if we look at Final Fantasy Tactics as where Ivalice kind of began, you can sort of see the themes that pervade and permeate Ivalice games. There's political conflict because it's Matsuno, but there's also like this deeply intertwined church and state, and you know, the religious elements and the magical elements. I said before that Final Fantasy Tactics story is basically like a streamlined version of Tactics Ogre, but that's not entirely true because like midway through the story, all of a sudden it becomes Final Fantasy and you have like these ancient demons and like a false prophet and basically people turning into monsters,
right.
Which never happened really in Tactics Ogre. Like magic was always kind of subdued and it was much more realistic. But, you know, after about two chapters, Final Fantasy Tactics just goes whole hog Final Fantasy, crazy plot twist kind of stuff. Lots of magic, lots of weirdness.
And I would say class is also a big issue in these games because it is a very medieval society where class was sort of who you were born into a situation in life and you could never escape from it. And I think the character of Delita from Final Fantasy Tactics is best, he best represents that sort of theme running throughout these games, and that he was not born to the higher classes, but he's aspiring to something greater, and there are all these forces that are preventing him from doing so. So he has to sort of have his own backhanded ways to rise to power.
Yeah, I mean, he becomes basically, like, in history, he's sort of regarded as the people's hero because he comes from lowborn status and through heroism and through leadership and being a great warrior and, you know, personally rescuing the princess Ovelia. He becomes like, you know, he rises to power and becomes the king, and he helps put a stop to put an end to the war and kind of puts the church in its place. But of course, Final Fantasy Tactics, like the actual story, shows that he was kind of a dirty dealer and that it was actually his noble-born friend Ramza who sort of turned his back on his upbringing to follow what he thought was right, who was the real hero. But he's been branded a heretic because he found the truth of the false prophet that the religion was founded on and so forth. So yeah, there's definitely that, like, history is not necessarily kind to the good people, but to the ones who sort of write history. Yeah, so another big part of Final Fantasy Tactics story is the Zodiac Stones. And this is something that does recur all throughout the Matsuno Ivalice games, and even beyond that. Basically, the main enemies you fight throughout the game are demons that are based on stones tied to the Zodiac, the signs of the Zodiac. And like these become sort of references throughout the game. So a lot of the super bosses you fight in Final Fantasy XII are references to either the Zodiac Stones or to previous Final Fantasy end bosses like Exdeath.
Right. And in the
and Zemus.
The International Zodiac Job System, there is a job for each sign of the Zodiac.
Yep. Is it just 12 or is there 13? Because
I believe there are 12. Maybe like there's a hidden job, but I thought there were 12.
Okay, because in Final Fantasy Tactics, there is a 13th Zodiac beast, Serpentarius, or Serpentius, or whatever his name is, down at the bottom of this deep dungeon, which is a reference to the game Deep Dungeon.
Of course.
But it's kind of like a super grueling side dungeon that you can explore, kind of like I can't remember which one it is in Tactics Ogre, but it's kind of the similar concept. Like, you keep going, it becomes progressively harder, and there's a really powerful boss
which
at the end.
Which seemed to be a sort of extra in a lot of RPGs at the time. I know Tales of Phantasia had that as well. It was sort of an homage to Tower of Draga, though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and Luthia 2 had the Deep Dungeon. Yeah, so basically the story behind Final Fantasy Tactics is religion is bad, don't trust religion. Jesus Christ was actually a demon. Or, mm-hmm. you know, Jesus Christ with the serial numbers filed off. Anyway.
And that made it over to America untouched.
Right.
Because of allegory.
Right. It wasn't actually Jesus. It was a woman. Jesus. Anyway. A lot of that doesn't really show up in Vagrant Story. Like you said, it didn't really start out as an Evil East game. But if you do want to kind of tie Vagrant Story to the Evil East world, I feel like it probably is the furthest out game on the timeline. Like, it feels like it has the most modern world. It's kind of like Reformation Europe. There's still a powerful clergy, and it has its own, basically its own army, its own secret agents. And you know, the government is kind of constantly in tension with the church. But at the same time, a lot of the magical trappings of Final Fantasy Tactics have kind of faded away.
One thing I forgot to bring up in the last podcast was the fact that Vagrant Story could have been its own universe or its own world, because if you look at the credits, the project is called The Phantom Pain, which may sound familiar to some of you who've been following modern game releases.
No kidding.
So yeah, it's like Vagrant Story, The Phantom Pain, or The Phantom Pain, Vagrant Story. So there's maybe The Phantom Pain was a larger game series that was sort of maybe he wanted to happen, sort of like how he made Tactics Ogre like installment 5 or 6 in the series. So yeah, just throwing that out there as trivia.
Supposedly there was a Vagrant Story 2 announced, and I've seen like a logo, and I don't know, like I've had trouble really confirming it, but it seems like it was something that they had in the works to some degree, and for whatever reason it kind of fell through. And in a way that's fine. I feel like Vagrant Story is brilliant and I love it, but I also kind of like it as a standalone project. Like, I don't know if you could... I think you could rework Vagrant Story to be perfected, but I don't know if you could recapture the conditions and the creative spirit that made Vagrant Story work. Like, it seems very much like a product of its time.
Yeah, it is probably the most, and I say this to praise it, the most convoluted, like, 32-bit JRPG to ever exist. Just, like, so many systems on top of systems on top of systems, like, working with each other.
Right, and against like Legend of Mana, they all matter.
Yeah, they do.
So yeah, like I said, magic plays a much smaller role in this game, whereas it's pretty prevalent in Final Fantasy Tactics. Here it's treated almost like the concept is, you know, a heretical myth. And early in the game where you see moving platforms, people are like freaking out. They're like, whoa, what wizardry is this? It's a rock that floats through the air? So even though the church knows about the existence of magic, and you as an agent can kind of tap into it, like, it's sort of a hidden secret that that's kind of kept suppressed. And ultimately, it turns out that you're racing against the church's agents and the leader of the Mullenkamp cult, Sidney Losterot, to reclaim the Grand Grimoire. Grand Grimoire. I can't say that. Whatever. The French
Grimoire?
Book of Magic. Yes.
Okay.
And then it turns out that the city you're exploring actually is the book. Like, the entire city is a magical tome.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of a cool twist. And then at the end of the game, like, the cool magical runes that the bad guy cuts off Sydney's back end up on Ashley's back, and he becomes a fugitive with amazing magical powers. The end. Kind of a dark game.
Yeah, it's like Crimson Shroud in that respect, but Crimson Shroud is not an evilest game. So I'll stop talking.
That we know of.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like the proto-Evil East, but then I think they really started to lay down the rules for Evil East with Final Fantasy Tactics Advance, which, like I said before, was really meant to pave the way for Final Fantasy XII, and that's where you get sort of like the golden era of Evil East, with airships and with judges, different races, it's bright and colorful and everything seems bustling. There's like this huge civilization. It doesn't feel as medieval. It doesn't feel like people are living in poverty. It feels like, you know, there is some of that, but at the same time, it also feels like, you know, sort of a kingdom, a civilization at its high point.
Right, and especially with Tactics Advance, it didn't use Matsuno's typical character designer. It used another person who I wish I knew their name because they do a lot of work.
Isn't it Minaba?
They also did Fire Emblem recently, right?
Did they?
I think so, but similar. But I just really love the designs for the races. I said this in the last podcast, but I can't stress it enough. They're just like, they're all very unique and they're all very, I don't know, they're just like visually like interesting.
Yeah. It's not just the usual orcs and elves.
Yeah, yeah. They did it. It's like there's these weird hippopotamus mages and there's these lizard guys with big floppy ears. And,
I like the fact that the bunny girls who cast magic don't really wear skimpy outfits. Like they have funky, cool outfits. Like the assassins wear veils and stuff. The red mages have big floppy hats and heavy, voluminous garments and robes.
Yeah,
like they didn't go for the obvious sexing up that Final Fantasy XII did. It was much more whimsical and practical.
Right. My friend at the time had the strategy guide for Tactics Advance, and like they had full page spreads of like every page had a different class on it, the design for the class and the race, and it's just beautiful. I love those designs. They're not standard for Matsuno games, but I just enjoy how colorful they are. They sort of reflect how, you like you said, this was a much better time for this region, this land.
Yeah. Of course, the downside of Tactics Advance was that the judges held great power and major battles very complicated. So boo on them. You know, like the interesting thing about Tactics Advance is that it's not really, I think, meant to be true Ivalice, because the book or the story happens when your character reads a book called Final Fantasy, and basically you're transported into the book, and the entire story revolves around the main character, Marche, or March. How do you pronounce that? Okay.
I don't want to talk about it.
I think it was it's Marsh.
Anyway,
but we also got the katakana to consult it.
Yeah. Remember the lame TV commercial? It was like, I am Marche.
Oh, God, you're right.
Oh, well, there you go, Marche. Yeah. So now we know. It involves him basically trying to destroy the happy world that his unhappy friends have created for themselves. So you're kind of like the villain of the piece. You're basically destroying the world, which is what Final Fantasy villains normally do.
Yeah.
But because you know that it's like it's all an illusion and you want to go back to the real world, you're kind of thrust into this position of being an asshole.
Isn't your the villain your little brother who's confined to a wheelchair and he's sickly and that world is his escape from reality?
He's one of the characters, but I think the main villain is your friend Mew.
Okay, I'm thinking of Domed.
His father is the drunkard Cid.
Right.
And, you know, in Ivalice, the fantasy Ivalice, it kind of seems weird to refer to a fantasy world like a fantasy version of that. But anyway, in fantasy Ivalice, his drunkard father is like the grand judge master. So he's basically like the most powerful and respected man in all the land. So there's like this total wish fulfillment. And for whatever reason, Marche is the only one who's like, I'm not buying into this. I'm going to destroy this and go back to boring reality.
What a downer.
Yeah, except when you finish the game, you can just immediately jump back into Ivalice without a problem and continue your journey, which felt odd, but I mean, whatever. I can play more
video games. So the ideas that showed up first in Final Fantasy Tactics Advance were kind of cemented and made more real in Final Fantasy XII, which... honestly, to me, that is sort of the high point of Ivalice. I don't mean like in terms of story. I mean like in terms of its realization. Like it feels like the most fully realized world. It is a vast land that you can explore with cities of all stripes. There's, you know, like little villages out in the wilds. There's like the major city of Rabanastre. There's the Imperial City where you have to get around by air taxi because it's so vast. There's like a logical explanation for all the magic that happens. And in fact, the origin of magic is kind of the thrust of the story. Like there were gods who basically gave humanity magic and created the world, and they want humanity to be their, you know, their subjects, their minions. And there's a heretic god, Venat, I think was his name, who is basically like, nah, it'd be cool if humanity just did its own thing. So, there's like this conflict between the gods, and people are basically trying to manipulate your party into doing their bidding and you know, kind of setting things right for them. So it's a very unusual story. Like it's kind of complicated and kind of vague, And it ends up with a villain who's not your typical villain. He doesn't want to destroy everything. He actually wants to unify everything. And his goals actually aren't necessarily so bad. He's just kind of a jerk about it.
Sure, just like Nobunaga.
Exactly.
I will say this game, the story was kind of hard to follow because you were given so much free rein where you could just be sort of questing and doing hunts and stuff, and then you'd occasionally stumble across a story point, and it's hard to connect the two when the scope is so big and when you're so removed from story points. You know, they happen so seldom if you're just kind of, you know, screwing around and taking advantage of the freedom the game does give you. So it's interesting to hear this kind of spelled out, and I was like, so that's what happened. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it also doesn't help that there was so much publisher interference with the story. And as we talked about last time, Vaughn and Panola, the main characters of the game, weren't really intended to be the main characters. It was a much older man, like a, oh my God, like a 36-year-old man.
What?
Bosch, who is just too old for people to relate to as a video game character.
Yeah, his life is over.
So Square was like, oh yeah, you know, this old dude, forget him. Put some kids in there. Make them the main characters. So I think that kind of muddied up the story, but it really revolves around Bosch and his protection of Ash. I mean, in a sense, it's kind of a parallel to, you know, Final Fantasy X, where the female is sort of the lead, the most important character, and her quest is really the central story, and everyone else is kind of accompanying her and helping her out. But instead of playing as her knight Bosch, you're playing as like these tag-alongs who just team up for the hell of it. As much as it was frustrating that Vaughn and Panello were kind of these point-of-view characters who didn't really have any relevance to the story, it did introduce some kind of amusing elements because they were kind of in the background. So there was one cutscene I remember where like there's all this important plot stuff going on, and meanwhile Vaughn and Panello are joking around in the back and they're like reciting Final Fantasy Tactics dialogue.
All right.
Just like doing the self-referential stuff, which is completely pointless but very amusing.
Right.
So the game didn't take itself too seriously, and it does kind of fall apart at the end because of, you know, the publisher interference and Matsuno leaving the game. But it does kind of wrap up, and like I said, it sort of paves the way for the degeneration of Ivalice, like the fall of the Empire and the Great Golden Civilization.
Mm-hmm.
But first, we got Final Fantasy XII Revenant Wings. Did you guys play that?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't. It's like the RTS one, right?
Yeah, kind of.
Okay.
It's very similar to Heroes of Mana, which came around the same time.
I played Heroes of Mana, and I was like, this is not going to work. I can't play this, so I totally avoided Revenant Wings.
Yeah, that and Blue Dragon Plus.
Oh, just God.
Like this weird trilogy of these DS RTS games that were all kind of playing terribly.
They didn't work.
And a lot of people put Revenant Wings on a pedestal, and it's just like, no, I don't think so.
Yeah,
it doesn't really earn much of anything.
Yeah, Jeremy, I think you reviewed. Did you review this game?
I did as well.
Oh, I did.
Okay. It was probably like a 3-man EGM thing.
Can you kind of explain how this expands on 12, or if it does at all?
It really doesn't. I mean, basically, what happens is, like, you know, Vaughn wanted to be an air pirate, so he becomes an air pirate.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then all the other characters show up. But most of the action actually takes place outside of Ivalice. It takes place in some, like, kingdom full of winged men. They look like, you know, the Hawkmen from Flash Gordon.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
That, that basically had no relevance whatsoever to any of the other Ivalice games. So you can kind of ignore it.
I don't think...
It's kind of pointless.
I don't know what role Matsuno had in this game, but I was reading an interview with it before
None.
The show. Okay, yeah. And he said he did not want this to be Final Fantasy XII-2, or the developers did not want this to be Final Fantasy XII-2. They wanted this to be its own thing outside of the universe or whatever, so... It was all a dream or whatever.
It was very. I think even I said this in the review or whatever I wrote was like it's very Saturday morning.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
It's basically like Final Fantasy XII, the animated series. It's
like, yeah, Final Fantasy XII babies.
Yeah, essentially. Because it is.
Yeah, it was much more lightweight and lighthearted.
I was just gonna say that it is much peppier than everything else in the original 12.
I would say the one good thing that Revenant Wings did for the series was give Vaughn a shirt.
Oh, thank God.
And then he showed up as an extra character in the remake of Final Fantasy Tactics. Or was it... Did he show up in A2? I can't remember. But anyway, he showed up in one of the games, and you can play as him, and he's got a shirt, and you're like, oh, I guess I don't mind Vaughn so much after all.
That's all it took.
Just needs a shirt.
It just needed a shirt.
Yeah. How about that?
Who knew?
Hey, he had some killer abs. If I had abs like that, I'd be walking around shirtless.
Man, those abs are freaky.
You can grate some cheese on those abs.
That age?
Jesus. Power crunches.
There's a lot of crunches down there in the sewers.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the last, I guess, real game in the Ivalice franchise was Final Fantasy Tactics A2, which, unlike Final Fantasy Tactics Advance, was not set in a book world. It was actually meant to be, even though it's a direct sequel to Tactics Advance, like it was meant to be in the real Ivalice for whatever reason. Hmm. So at the same time, like it still works a lot like Tactics Advance, in that you have judges presiding over each law, and you have guilds and so on and so forth. But the difference is that the judges don't have as much weight, I guess. So the battle laws they issue are more like battle suggestions.
Oh, yeah.
And you're not penalized as much for breaking them. But I don't know, like A2 seems really inessential. And I guess part of that is because the plot just lacks the sort of compelling hook that Advance did, which was, you know, like Marche trying to unmake reality and get back to the real world. Whereas this, the character Luso, the protagonist of A2, is just like, yay, I'm in an adventure world. I'm going to have an adventure.
Ah, yeah, yes.
So
the stakes
kind of,
were
yeah,
not as high.
Saturday morning cartoon.
Yeah.
And also I felt like, this is just talking about design, but the game sort of was like borrowing from Monster Hunter hooks in that you were relying on a lot of drops in order to build things. And I found that to be like another bad idea that didn't need to be in this game.
You think it was riffing on Monster Hunter? Was Monster Hunter popular by that point?
I think by 2008, 2009 it was, yeah. Hmm. I mean, the original game came out in 2005, so I think that was sort of...
Yeah,
like
but no one cared about Monster Hunter on PlayStation 2.
Right,
it was,
but
it was
PSP. I think by the late aughts, Peace Hunter was 2010, and that was like a Monster Hunter game, but with Metal Gear, so...
You mean Peace Walker? But I do like
Peace Hunter.
That's a little more on the nose.
That's Mega Man.
I don't know. I really can't find it in my heart to say anything about Tactics A2 because I just don't care. Like, do you guys have anything to say?
No, I said this in last episode. It's like, I was totally indifferent. I did not really even put an ounce of interest in it.
Yeah. I mean, I played it for 12 hours wanting to like it, having spent so much time with the last game, and I just couldn't. It just I was just forcing myself to play it, and I was like, this is wrong.
Well, it felt forced.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
Did we really need it? I mean, especially when we already knew that Matsuno wouldn't be involved. And,
right.
I mean,
yeah, I feel like it's so tragic. There's an entire FFT game outside of the crappy social game, which I hope we don't talk about, that exists that is just like kind of boring. I feel like that's a tragedy.
No, I completely agree. Like, if you had told me 10 years prior to A2, like, there will be a sequel to Final Fantasy Tactics, and you won't care, I would have said, no, right. you liar.
It sort of reminds me of all of the Symphony of the Night-style Castlevania games on DS, where just, like, eventually you're like, okay, I don't need these every year, you know? Just, like,
I never experienced that sentiment, sorry.
Really? I mean, I didn't like Order of Ecclesia, so that's just me.
Oh, well, no, that...
Well, that was the last one.
So. Yeah, they closed the book.
Yeah. It's like, okay, Bob's finally sick of this.
Thanks, Konami. Oh, I got what I wish for. I don't want that either.
Yeah, so after A2, there was Crystal Defenders, which was that WiiWare?
It was WiiWare. It's on iOS. Actually, you know, the Wii version is actually the superior one because it has, like, real progression in it. Because, the mobile version is just, like, punishingly hard.
Huh.
And it's just a real mess. But yeah, not exactly related to Ivalice. I mean, they don't really say it one way or another.
No, it just has all the character designs.
Yeah. Hmm.
The races and everything.
Exactly.
And then,
tower defense.
Yeah, it didn't really have a story to it, so there's nothing really, like, it didn't add or subtract from the lore.
Yeah.
It's just kind of there.
And I feel like there was... Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I feel like there's another mobile or something like that game that uses the characters, and it's not tower defense, but I can't think of the name.
Well, I... There is Sliding Heroes, which has like the same sort of character designs.
Yeah, but it's not like...
No, that's okay. Absolutely not even similar.
Okay.
What is Sliding Heroes? I've never heard of that.
Just a cute little action game where you like have these armies of heroes and you slide them along these levels, basically, with the accelerometer. And yeah, it's just a... It's very simple. I mean, they just... pushed out the door really kind of early on in Square and Taito's output.
Hmm.
So
weird. Okay. Yeah, and then I guess kind of the cherry on the Ivalice sundae, although I don't know if it really deserves to be called that, is Final Fantasy Tactics S. And I can find nothing about this game. It was released about a year ago in Japan for mobile platforms, and as far as I can tell, no one who speaks English has played it, which isn't too surprising because, you know, mobile games are tied to carriers and platforms and everything. Yeah. So, you know, there are those limitations. But, like, I feel like it's a tactics game. Surely someone should care. But
yeah,
I guess it's kind of a sign of what happened to this whole franchise that, no one cares.
I feel like it's sort of like that. There's this Mega Man social game that came out for phones in Japan, mm-hmm. and it just is like looks like the worst high school computer project in the world. Yes. It feels like that. Like it's so unspeakably bad that no one even wants to comment on it. I remember seeing a trailer for the FF Tactics S, and it was heartbreaking. I'm like, okay, I'm done. I don't even want to follow up on this because it's just like, you know, let's trot out the corpse for another round.
That is basically it.
But where does Song Summoner fit in all this? I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of sad now that we've done this Evilese podcast because it starts out so well and then just kind of it falls off a cliff. Like once Matsuno left Square, it all kind of started sucking. Like there's nothing really good about the post-Matsuno Evilese games. I mean, they're competent, but they're uninspired. They don't have that whatever it is that Matsuno brings to his game.
Right. I mean, for me, and I brought this up earlier, but I really feel like Evilese is more of a theme than a place or a setting, as much sense as that makes. Like, I feel like Crimson Shroud might as well be an Evilese game because it has a very dark tone. There's a huge history of things happening, and you are just a bit player who will never be heard from again, probably after the end of the adventure. Just it feels like it has all of those same thematic elements, along with how it looks, how it sounds. I mean, it might as well be Evilese, even though it's not, you know, specifically of that universe.
Does that mean you consider the Ogre games part of Evilese also? Because they have the same kind of vibe.
I mean, I feel like that vibe got more and more specific as he continued making games. I feel like with Tactics 1, it was sort of like, this is what it should be. Not Tactics Ogre, but Final Fantasy Tactics. I feel like that was the first real understanding of, I don't know. I feel like he really got all of his themes in working order with that game. That's my opinion.
Put it another way, Bob. Perhaps the real Evilese is in our hearts.
That's true. In the heart of every laughing child.
Well, fortunately, it seems like Square has decided to stop flogging the corpse. So I don't think there will be any more damage done to our fond memories at this point. So I guess that's good.
And I think they've backed away from let's make entire game universes, multi-game universes, because they're like, hey guys, let's try to make one game at a time again first, and then maybe we can think about making more than one game. You know?
Yeah.
Just they got a little too ahead of themselves with the HD generation, and I guess they were not predicting how resource intensive all these games would be.
Yeah, polymorphic content didn't work out so well.
No.
Anyway, so now Matsuno is working on Unsung Story, and to me it kind of seems like he's trying to realize what he intended to do with Tactics Ogre and Ogre Battle in the first place, which is create this kind of immense kingdom and then tell lots of stories there. And he only told two stories in that world. But it seems like there's more potential, you know, kind of the episodic nature of Unsung Story for him to realize, you know, like kind of live up to its potential, I guess, and actually mm-hmm. explore the potential of that world. So here's hoping. It's not exactly Evilese, but, you know, it's kind of a similar spirit, I hope. I hope those games, or this game, lives up to the best of Matsuno's work from the past. We'll see.
I trust him.
Yeah.
Anyway, that is Retronauts Episode Pocket 16, whatever it's called. Yes. And anyway, so that's Retronauts Episode 16 Pocket. Thanks again to everyone listening, and especially Jeff Tibayan for requesting the Evilese topic. I hope that we didn't depress you too much by talking about the fall of a once great semi-franchise. Thanks, Bob and Ray, for sitting in. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And as usual, you can find us on Twitter, on Facebook, on Twitch, on SoundCloud. You can find us at Retronauts.com. For show notes, mm-hmm. you can give us 5 stars or 1 star if you want to be that way at on iTunes, and you can listen to us in this very same podcast space again next week with a new episode. Thanks, everyone. I'm Jeremy Parrish, and this is the end of this episode.